Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Richard Sachs. We're on Lost Arts Radio and glad to be with you again. And for today's show, to introduce our speaker, our guest, I wanted to remind you back in earlier 2022, when we had Dr. Artis, our friend Dr. Artis on the show, talking about the venom insight into what the initial outbreak of disease that was blamed on a virus could have been. And Dr. Artis was one of the first that was saying, not only was it not a virus, but it was a toxin. Didn't spread like a, you know, even if you believe in viral spread of disease, it didn't look like that, how it developed. And it was focused on certain areas where a toxin of some kind was developed. And he found out through the help of a doctor friend of his, that it looked like some kind of venom concoction. And one of his theories was that it could have been spread partially in the water system, as well as by air, by aerosol, and by contact surfaces. Some people had theories that it was on computer keyboards, various ideas like that. But he really felt like there was a component of spreading through the water system. And I and other people said, how could that be? Because water system goes to everybody. And there's no way it could happen. Not feasible. And there was somebody, a reporter, investigative reporter named Janet Phelan, who actually found out that there is a secondary water system that we're not supposed to know about, parallel to the main delivery lines in your municipal water. And you're not supposed to know about that, and ran into different obstructions and resistance in uncovering it. And as you probably know, a lot of us have found that there are obstacles specially made for people who uncover things like that, that they have to deal with after exposure. And fortunately, we were able to get Janet to come back on today. Last time was in 2022, I think around in July when she was on last. And we're going to see what's happened with her and with further episodes in her investigative reporting, which she does all the time. And she's going to share some of that stuff with us. Should be very revealing. So welcome, Janet. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me back on, Richard. We're going to be taking some detours today. I think away a bit from the investigative work and talking a little bit more about blowback. And I really appreciate your willingness to have me on to discuss this, because things are getting very peculiar for me.
Janet, you cut out for a second. You said a little bit more about, and then it went blank.
Well, sorry about that. About blowback and fallout.
Yes.
From the work I'm doing.
Yeah, and that would be great to hear about.
I made a decision some time ago that I was really going to not talk about my personal situation and keep the focus on the reporting, because there has been sort of a concerted effort now that has been launched against me, and I felt that discussing it publicly would shift the focus away from the work. And I think the work is important, mm-hmm. and make it more personal. And I didn't want to do that. And I didn't want also to risk contaminating the work with questions about what's happening to me. You know, it just seemed too messy.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, things have ramped up to a degree where I really do need to say some things about my personal situation now.
Yeah, I think it's actually good to make it personal. And I don't think it gets in the way at all. Because if people understand that the reporters who are brave enough to get into some of these things are actual people, then they can relate more. And it has to do with their lives too. So whatever you're willing to share is great. I don't see a problem.
Thank you. I use the word personal, and whenever I use that, I think back to the the phrase that people used to use in the 60s when they said personal is political. And in this case, it really is. And what it is now that is happening to me, I use the word personal, but it is intensely political. Mm-hmm. In Genesis and in its nature.
Well, what does political mean? I mean, it just means what's going on in the world, right?
Right.
It's the development of the power structure and its ongoing war against humanity.
Well, you know, political basically refers to power and the exercise of power. Yeah. And if the decision is being made now at higher levels of power to launch attacks on individual citizens, reporters, truth tellers, then that is actually substance and subject for political discussion. And it's just difficult to do. You know, it's far easier for me to talk about double water lines and remote control valves. We're talking about something external, which I can describe and point to blueprints. But when I start talking about personal attacks, I'm not trained, you know, to discuss such things publicly. I'm trained to be an observer, a camera, so to speak, you know, being right. able to point my attention here, there, and elsewhere, and then report on what I find. So when I have to switch the camera back on myself, it becomes difficult.
I think it makes sense, though. I mean, if you're using a camera that has a certain experience and conveys things to people, it makes sense to know what kind of a camera it is, even if you're talking about yourself.
Well, I'm experiencing massive chemical weapons attacks. I mean, that cutting to the chase, that's what I'm experiencing. And these attacks are being launched through several delivery systems, none of which are unheard of. The individuals launching these attacks, some of whom I could actually name, tend to be either state authorities or agents of state authorities acting under state instructions. And it's becoming actually personally rather dangerous. I tend to believe very strongly in what I'm doing and to try to just keep doing it. And I understand that these attacks may have several purposes. One might be to inhibit me from doing exactly what I'm doing. Another might be to make my situation so uncomfortable, personally perilous and uncomfortable, that I throw up my hands and just give up the ghost. Mm-hmm. None of this is in my personality makeup, you know.
When did it start?
Well, that's all of this started as a result of the events surrounding my mother's murder and the subsequent cover-up. And it does appear that my placement into some sort of chemical weapons testing program, if that is indeed what it is, was exacerbated by my response to all this, which was, you know, sort of outrage and intense interest and focus on uncovering and reporting certain kinds of state assault on other kinds of other groups. And as you may know, Richard, and as some of the people watching this may know, I have written extensively on biological weapons. This uncovering of this water delivery system was certainly part of that reporting, but it was certainly not all of it. I've also reported rather extensively on what's happening to targeted populations in court proceedings, particularly the elderly and the disabled, and what's happening to them under court-authorized guardianships. And along the way, I uncovered that the judges in these cases apparently are receiving bribes and payoffs through the cases. Right. And so you know, I have been able to, along the way, to make some contributions to our better understanding of the world in which we now inhabit. And I don't think that when all of this started in my life surrounding what was happening to my mother, that the expectation was that I would take this path. I think the expectation was that I'd sort of, you know, wilt and collapse into a corner and become, you know, completely non-viable.
Would it make sense to explain what happened to your mother?
My mother was murdered, and there was an intense cover-up. And
I mean, was that connected to the work that you were doing? Or
no, it was not.
Okay.
It was not connected.
More random.
Well, I don't think it was random at all. I think that my mother was chosen as a sort of a sacrificial subject. I go into this with documentation, a lot of documentation, and in some depth in my 2014 book, Exile. And that kind of brings me into the exacerbation of my situation, because up until then I was getting messed with, but it wasn't at the point that it is now, which is really a rather frantic sort of effort against me. Frantic, relentless, continual. It's becoming rather amazing. So the publication of the book seemed to exacerbate the pre-existing situation. And I think that the publication of my book on the pandemic in 2021, which is titled At the Breaking Point of History, also resulted in a ramping up of attacks against me. So I just think I didn't respond the way I was expected to. I was expected to, you know, to become immobile and overwhelmed and not expected to work as steadily and diligently as I have in my profession to keep uncovering and reporting on the truth and the facts of our ongoing situation. And I think I've made it much worse for myself.
Why do you think that in some cases, like with your mother, they just kill the person, whereas in what you're describing directed at yourself, they don't take the easy route of just sending somebody and killing you? They want to subject you to this kind of torture. What makes that kind of decision? It seems a lot less efficient if you want to get somebody out of the way.
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And it's a question I've been asked before. And I've got a couple of different answers to that. First of all, torturing someone and doing so in a way that others are aware of it, and that certainly has been my experience, mm-hmm. Serves warn others away from taking the sort of path I've taken. It's like people realize, oh, we can't do that. We might end up like Janet.
Right.
In that sense, torture not only impacts the individual being tortured, but it sends a wider message mm-hmm. To other reporters, other truth tellers. And also, you know, the fact is there have been attempts to outright kill me. And some of those attempts are discussed in Exile. Some of them are not discussed in Exile. In fact, they managed to kill a couple of other people who were simply not involved in the situation, almost more like collateral damage. Just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's discussed in Exile as well. So, you know, I'm not the sharpest tool on the block, but I'm kind of sharp. And I was able to step aside, in a sense, and remove myself from what were possibly extremely life-threatening situations. Mm. And at this point in time, it's just becoming a constant. I want to use the word annoyance, but it's far worse than annoyance. For example, I came out to another location to do this interview. I don't like to do them at home because my internet gets messed with really badly at home. So, and I think that the internet connection here is far superior to mine. So I've left my house, and it is highly expected that when I come home, there will be evidence of illegal entry into my home. Now, why do they come in? Well, they come in basically, usually in order to exercise more attacks with chemical weapons. So, for example, they can spray the floor with a heart attack weapon. So I come in, you know, I come bouncing into the house, and all of a sudden begin to experience what could be a heart attack. Quickly have to wash the floor. I mean, that's what I have to do. Okay, that's an example. There's also food contamination or other kinds of contamination. I've been very reluctant to talk about this because it all sounds kind of conspiratorial and possibly a little crazy, you know, that a person would continue to experience these kinds of things. And that brings us to, unfortunately, another reason that they may be involved in this kind of torture, because they want me, possibly, to talk about this publicly and therefore soil whatever sort of intact reputation I have as a non-crazy person. So there you have it.
And a non-conspiracy person, you said?
Non-crazy person.
Non-crazy person.
Yeah. I've got a pretty good reputation. I mean, my reporting is pretty solid. And I am reporting on some rather radioactive issues. But if I get the reputation as a crazy person, then nobody's going to take my reporting seriously either. So that could be another aspect of this.
When did you first notice that these attacks like you're describing were happening?
Well, you know, there began to be some things going on surrounding my mother's situation. For example, while she was still alive, I was living in Long Beach, California, and I spent a couple of days in Riverside where I was trying to go to court surrounding her situation in order, rather misguidedly and foolishly trying to help her. And so I came home to Long Beach where I was living. I was living in a little house behind a house, and I was walking past the front house, and I heard the landlady say, "Oh, she's here. Quick, call the police." I thought, what? So I go into my little cottage, and guess what? My cottage has been tossed. And it's obvious that somebody has been in there. Now, most people on coming home and finding their place has been tossed will call the police. But I'm thinking, wait a minute, the police are already coming. Now, why would that be? So I start looking around the floor, and there were drugs everywhere, scattered little pink pills. I have no idea what they were, scattered all over the floor. And I think, okay, the police are on the way here. I have drugs in my house. What the heck am I? So I closed the door, I shut all the shades, and I very quickly started scooping and flushing because I don't use drugs and I didn't want to be arrested for, you know, planted drugs. In about 5 to 8 minutes, the police showed up. There was a bam, bam, bam on the door, and I flattened myself against the wall and just froze. They couldn't see in. I, you know, closed all the drapes and the blinds and shut the door. But right. That was one of the very first such incidents.
So did they just go away or did they wait?
They did. They went away. They figured I wasn't there and they went away. And I finished cleaning up the drug-infested mess.
Did you know the people in the front house?
Well, they were my landlords, landladies, yes.
Right, but
to that extent, I knew them.
Not people that you could just talk to and see what was going on?
No.
And how soon was that after the waterline work?
It was before the waterline work.
It was way before. Okay.
Way before. Yeah. So the work that I started to do, the investigations and the reporting I started to do were based on the awareness that my mother was murdered for reasons that weren't kosher at all. And so if this was happening to her, was it possible that there were other forces at play? There were other programs. There were other possibilities for harming other people. And that was the basic perception that impelled me into this work. At the time that the things were happening to my mother, I was trained as a reporter. I'd worked as a reporter. I wasn't at that moment working at all. So I took the understanding of what had happened to her and began to use that basic perception to inform other projects, other work of mine.
Okay.
Later.
So what happened? How did the timeline develop after that? What happened next?
Well, there were. You mean after the drug planting?
After the drug incident, yeah.
Right. So shortly after the drug incident.
Oh, and we should say what year that was too.
And that was. Late 2002.
Okay.
And shortly after that, I was physically assaulted by officers of the law in Long Beach, California, and unconscious and in a coma for several days.
Wow.
This is discussed in great length in the 2014 book, Exile. I've mentioned that. That yes, I appear to be in some sort of torture program, but there have certainly been efforts at various times to dedicated efforts to completely put a stop to what I'm doing, and that was one of the efforts. And amazingly, after several days, I woke up on a heart monitor in a hospital, and I had some difficulty getting out of the hospital in one piece. That is discussed also in that 2014 book, but I did get out. And at that point, I think my life changed irrevocably because I was no longer an individual who felt kind of, you know, safe and secure in living in America. I realized that there were forces at play that were very dangerous and very deadly. I realized that the authorities were no longer to be trusted by me, and that if I were going to do anything to correct anything that had happened to me, I was going to have to embark on a path of informing other people, using whatever journalistic skills I have to help others to get up to the speed I was at. Right. Because at that point, my life as I knew it was no longer something that I could continue with.
Wow. So that was,
I was attacked by the police on January 3rd of 2003.
So that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And over that time, you kept working on the investigative reporting that continued?
After that point, yeah. In 2004, I was working as a columnist for the Santa Monica Daily Press, and I, at that point, had gotten a tip-off about this double-line water system, and I, the tip-off was credible, and I had to, first of all, understand how could it be that one house would get a different kind of water than another house. So yeah. I sat down with the engineers and went through, you know, walked them through my tip-off and asked them to explain to me, you know, how could this happen? How can you explain this to me in an engineering sense? And I was fortunate because the individuals I talked to were very willing to explain to me how that could happen. And so armed with that information, I went over to City Hall in Santa Monica and plunked down my first Public Records Act request asking for a viewing of Santa Monica water records. And within 6 hours, I lost my job.
Wow.
The editor of the Santa Monica Daily Press, her name was Carolyn Zachariasen, called me. She was very angry. She left me a voice message saying she had not authorized me to make Public Records Act requests about water. I mean, it was very general. I claimed no conspiracy. I simply asked to see water records. You know, I that's all. So she wanted me to know in her voice message that I had endangered her position as editor of Santa Monica Daily Press. She was quite frothing at the mouth. So I figured...
But she wouldn't explain what she was saying coherently and say
well,
why.
Well, she was very angry, and she was letting me know that I had crossed the line. So
yeah,
I went
but
over...
How? But she didn't say how.
By asking for water records.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does if it does, because apparently what happened, she got a call from the city attorney's office,
yeah,
telling her what I'd done and how unacceptable it was.
That doesn't make any sense either, because why would it be unacceptable to the city to ask for?
Well, if they had a tweaked water system, which they do, if they were trying to hide it, which they are,
yeah,
if it was actually a weapon system, which it is,
yeah, but none of that can be admitted.
No.
So why would they say it was unacceptable?
Well, Carolyn would never speak to me again, and I was no longer employed at that office. So that was the end of that.
Wow.
So I understood that I was onto something. So I figured, okay, I don't have the backing of this hometown newspaper, but that isn't going to stop me.
Right.
And so I continued on with my research and the investigation.
Now, that was way before any fake pandemics.
Way.
So why were you interested, with no pandemic going on, about the secondary water system?
Well, obviously, this, from the tip-off I'd gotten, this was a weapon system. Why would our infrastructure be tweaked and reconfigured so it could potentially serve as a weapon system against people living in the U.S.? This is not acceptable
right.
in any free society.
And
this
even,
is a very big deal, Richard.
Oh, I'm not questioning that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the mentality at the time.
Oh, the mentality.
This was a new idea to you, I think, right?
That it was.
And so the person that tipped you off to it, did they explain to you how this could be used or why it was a danger?
I can't discuss that any further.
Okay, that's all right. So anyway, you just knew that it could be used as a general weapon system, and that was the motivation for finding out what was going on with it, starting in 2003.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there is an aspect of my personality that's a bit like a pit bull or a badger. You know, I get onto something and I get kind of excited and focused and I don't want to stop. So,
especially when people let you know it's unacceptable to find out about.
Well, I mean, really, I mean, I'm a member of the press. What do you mean it's unacceptable to ask for public records? Come on. Yeah.
That's why I was interested in what the city person had said that would make sense to the editor, you know, of why it was a bad thing for you to do. I mean, what?
Well, I would love to know.
Yeah. Okay, so you kept investigating,
mm-hmm.
and you found other ways besides public records to find out about it.
Yes, I actually had to develop what I call back doors, because these Public Records Act requests that were being tendered to city authorities were resulting in rather unacceptably inappropriate communications in response. And some of these are archived in my pandemic book, At the Breaking Point of History. For example, that first request for public records having to do with water in Santa Monica resulted in a response from the city of Santa Monica saying, "We don't have any water records." I mean, really, really. So another response, which I think is also archived in the book, came from the city of Los Angeles, which was a bit of a different response. They said, "Oh, yes, we have water records, but because of national security, we have to redact these records. And so we're going to have to create entirely new blueprints for you. So give us a few weeks." Whoa. I mean, every response along the way was revelatory as to the radioactivity of the issue that I was pursuing.
The other thing it brings up is the depth of collusion between all these different levels and departments and seemingly separate companies and public agencies. And I mean, I think this illustrates, among other things, why we're taught that anybody that believes in conspiracies of any kind other than bank robberies is crazy by definition, because it's so important to protect and black out the idea that the conspiracy is deeper than virtually anybody has any imagination of.
Well, the conspiracy, as I uncovered and have reported in many articles, contaminated the construction of our legal system and our laws. And I do discuss quite a bit, and I probably mentioned it on your show before, how this Section 817 of the USA Patriot Act blows apart any protections that people may think they have from biological weapons in the U.S. Section 817 goes through some rigmarole of prohibitions against these weapons, who can and cannot possibly possess any such weapons. And then there's this final caveat, which states that the prohibitions contained in this section shall not apply to any duly authorized U.S. governmental activity. And so with the stroke of a pen, the U.S. gave itself complete permission to violate its own biological weapons laws. They interestingly enough, that they did something very similar with their chemical weapons legislation, because chemical weapons you can't possess, you can't deploy, you can't do this, you can't do that. But then there is a section entitled exemptions, which reveals to us that members of the authorities can indeed deploy, develop, stockpile these weapons. It says that in black and white. Right. And on further research, I started looking recently at the Chemical Weapons Convention. I'm looking at it directly because of what's happening to me now personally. And I discovered something very weird about the Chemical Weapons Convention, which is apparently that the way it's constructed is it is only relating to state parties. That means, for example, that if Russia claims that another country is using chemical weapons against Russia, then Russia can complain to the Chemical Weapons Convention. But let's just say, for example, that the citizens of Russia start claiming that the government of Russia is using the weapons against them. They can't do anything. And mm-hmm. and this appears to be something that is written has been written into the convention. Now I'm attempting to right now to engage the Chemical Weapons Convention, because I not only am alleging that these weapons are being used against me, I have evidence that they're being used against me. And I constructed a correspondence, an email. I sent it to the OPCW, the Office for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, which is where the convention is seated. And they simply won't respond.
Where is that geographically?
Geographically, I do believe that that office is in the Netherlands.
Okay. It's an international NGO, basically.
Well, it's not an NGO. It's part of...
It's not...
No, because it is, in a sense, it's part of the UN structure of arms treaties. Now,
okay.
You know, so you've got the Biological Weapons Convention, which has absolutely no teeth. It was written in such a way that it has no verification protocol and no mechanism for addressing any country that violates the convention. So you have a completely...
Is that the one from 1990 that went into effect then?
The Biological Weapons Convention went into effect in the mid-70s.
What about the one that was written by Dr. Boyle?
He didn't write the convention. He wrote the domestic law governing biological weapons, which was then amended through 817, in Section 817 in the Patriot Act. He did not write the convention.
Okay. That's often misunderstood, I think.
Well, I believe it is misunderstood, right?
Yeah, interesting. So there's no effective safeguard against biological or chemical weapons legally being used by governments against their own people?
No, absolutely not. So let's just dip into history for a second and move it forward into the present. Let's say, for example, that the U.S. starts putting together FEMA camps where they can gas their own citizens. Now, according to the Chemical Weapons Convention, this does not appear to be a violation, because it is totally geared to states alleging that other states have attacked them in this manner.
Right.
Now, this is what I am understanding from reading the convention and consulting with legal experts about this as well. So, all these protections and all this hoopla and all of this drama around this law and that international treaty, what does this actually mean? It means we've been conned.
Right. Plus the international legal organizations like ICC and other ones like that really don't have jurisdiction over any country that doesn't agree to be under that. Right. Under
well, there is that
authority.
This is a little also. I've got some questions about that. The ICC essentially was launched, I believe, by the Rome Statute. And so the countries that have signed on to the Rome Statute mm-hmm. and have essentially signed on to jurisdiction by the ICC. The U.S. has not, and Russia has not, and Ukraine has not, and some other countries have not. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, recently the ICC issued an arrest warrant against Vladimir Putin for his relocation of Ukrainian children to Russia. Now, aside from the protestations that such relocation was done for reasons of securing the safety of the children. I really can't comment on that. The fact is that the ICC doesn't have any jurisdiction over Russia. No. So it would be sort of like, for example, Richard, let's say I launch an action in Tennessee, mm-hmm. and I say that you trespassed on my property in Wisconsin. I mean, that it's almost like the same thing. There's no jurisdiction.
You said the U.S. and Russia are not in that jurisdiction. What about Germany?
Oh, I believe Germany is.
Yeah, because there was a statement by one of the Russian high officials yesterday, I think. And that was that if Putin was to be arrested or tried to be arrested in Germany, it would be considered an act of war against Russia. And that suggested to me that Germany might be under ICC.
Probably is. I would imagine it probably is. Yeah. So, what I found interesting about this is that the ICC seems to be sort of ignoring the jurisdictional issues and seems to be moving in a direction that is politically motivated rather than legally sound and structured. And that is worrisome in the same way that the CWC is worrisome because you can't report to them actions by states against their own citizens. And the BWC, the Biological Weapons Convention, also worrisome because you can't do a darn thing. I mean, you can't make any reports. You can't get any justification for any sort of sanctions, nothing. So we have a whole...
When I was talking about these organizations that are not associated necessarily with any particular country, you mentioned that they may be under the UN ultimately. And a lot
of organizations
do come from the UN. And it brings up the question, you know, which most people really don't understand the answer to for good reason, because it's hidden. What is the UN?
Yeah.
You know, it's on the surface, the image for the public is a wonderful organization that's supposed to overcome all problems, including war and starvation and lack of resources and any unfairness where somebody's getting hurt by any organization. Under that facade, the UN seems to be one of the most evil criminal organizations in the world. I mean, from what we can tell so far, what do you think about that?
I generally try not to use words like that. I try to focus on what they're actually doing, like constructing this big Biological Weapons Convention treaty without any enforcement capability. Like, you know, people can draw their own conclusions. Right. And I'm always more comfortable with talking about the nuts and bolts of what the UN or any of its parties are doing,
right,
rather than describing them as you might have aptly described them.
And you can blame that on me, you know, you didn't say it, but... I don't say that lightly. I mean, that's after decades and decades of investigating the global power structure and where it leads and top levels and what the agendas are, why, how, and when everything is intended to happen. And it's in progress now. This is my conclusion from investigation, not from something I read. And my whole interest at this point, since I think our time is limited, not just in this interview, but in the length of time left for humanity to not be destroyed, I'm interested in solutions. But the reason that I came to that conclusion is so many interlocking sub-agendas seem to lead back to the UN. And it sounds like you've encountered some of them.
Yes, indeed I have. And the rosy picture that the UN paints for itself is not deserved.
All right. I used to work for the UN as a six-year-old collecting money for UNICEF.
Oh, my goodness.
Everybody did that at Halloween when I was going. around doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was wonderful. It was to save all the children from everything bad and to work for wholeness and wonderfulness and goodness and the American way, and basically the same thing that Superman believes in. It was just wonderful. And that was the public facade. And I think when Rockefeller and associates set up the basis for it, that was supposed to be the public perception, the end of war, figuring out what was wrong with the League of Nations and fixing that in version two, which was the United Nations, and what it's really doing. And I think there are thousands and maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of good people working for the UN and for its organizations under it that probably believe that it's all for good.
Possibly at one time. I think it's getting harder to maintain that perception given some of the recent revelations and activities by that organization. This pandemic treaty that they're trying to construct, the amendments to the international health regulations, which will rob us of any individual health sovereignty, the World Economic Forum. I mean, we're almost getting overloaded now with information about how the UN is actually trampling on us.
Right. And those are subsidiaries of the UN, the WHO,
yes,
and the WEF, and
yes,
like that, right?
Correct.
They all have the same origin. Yeah. So, what do you think the public needs to know about the other wonderful organization called the WHO that's obviously to make everybody in the world healthy?
Right. The WHO is attempting, right now there's a two-pronged effort to, one is to pass this pandemic treaty, and the other is to amend the international health regulations, which I believe came into a force originally in 2005, in order to ensure that should we have another public health crisis or a perceived public health crisis, different those two.
Or a possible potential health crisis.
Potential, right, a potential. Yeah, it might not be here yet, but it's lurking in, under the bed or in the closet, right? In these scenarios, the WHO is attempting through these two mechanisms to enforce an obligatory sort of one health response, where we will not have the ability to make our own decisions about our health care, but will be mandated as citizens of the world to line up and drink their Kool-Aid.
Right.
I want to say something about that because I'm in southern Mexico, and I've been here. I was here during the pandemic, and it became abundantly obvious to a lot of the people here that if you went to the hospital with pandemic viral symptoms, you were not getting out alive.
Right.
And so a lot of individuals whom I spoke with, Mexicans, decided that their best course, should they get sick with something, was to stay home and treat with native medicine, that's herbal medicine. Yeah. And I heard many wonderful recovery stories of people who drank this tea or that tea, and I was busy recording what kinds of teas they were drinking and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so this was basically a local response. I know personally, I knew people who got sick, went to the hospital, and died. So under these amendments to the IHR or under this potential pandemic treaty, and both of these are currently being hammered out at the WHO, you won't be able to do that. You'll have to go exactly as you are told to by the central authority at WHO.
Right. And that's because the leaders The elected or appointed or self-appointed leaders of each country in the WHO have said, we'll do whatever you say. We'll sign up as members of WHO. So whatever WHO policy is, we'll voluntarily be subject to it.
Voluntarily, right.
Including the U.S. And it brings up so many questions, one of which is, with the basic foundation of what the U.S. was supposed to be, can a president or a Congress legally agree to a treaty that violates basic U.S. law, or even more so, inalienable rights? And I would say no, but it's done all the time.
It's done all the time. Correct.
So, and that's the, you know, if you have to kind of generalize the problem, all these things are either illegally done or they're done under exceptions that were written into the law to make it not apply to government's actions against citizens. In either case, inalienable rights that belong not just to Americans, but everybody worldwide and everywhere, those are violated and nothing happens. And I think it's suggestive evidence of the existence of a globally coordinated power structure that is not interested in protecting human beings.
I think you're right, Richard. And I think the contortions that we see our public officials go through when they're trying to justify unjustifiable actions and decisions are a good alert to that, a good clue that we're seeing something moving and acting through them that is not something that our basic documents, our founding fathers, however you want to term this, had put into place.
Yeah.
They're contorting themselves in order to accommodate another sort of impetus.
So would it be accurate to characterize what you've been saying? The bottom line of it is that you're uncovering more and more examples of the existence of such a structure in the world moving against humanity as a whole. And you're seeing a microcosm example of that against you personally.
Yeah.
Both at the
yeah.
same time.
Yes. And actually, that's a very strongly a reason that I'm coming forward about this, because what is happening to me, as bizarre and as usual as it seems to be, is actually pretty much in line with what we're seeing globally,
right,
against individuals, nations, peoples. It's just another example of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it leaves you at the end with, all right, we've got almost 8 billion people, although there's some evidence that population is really being knocked down now, but say roughly 8 billion people. And you've got, if you trace the power structure through the minions that are just doing their jobs and just following orders, like the Nuremberg people were, at every level of government and corporations up to the top, and you look for who's running this whole attack against life on the planet, it's a very small number of individuals, families and individuals. And yet the organization and implementation of it is such that we're moving fairly quickly in a not very optimistic direction. So does it bring you to the point of saying, you know, the main thing is how can it be reversed, right? Rather than just continually saying, look at this example, this example, this example. You could go on indefinitely while we're all being killed. But really the point of it is, okay, so what do you do? Right? Because all these so-called representatives, even the ones that expose this stuff, they do nothing. Like, for example, in the U.S., where we have, unfortunately, political parties, which I see no benefit from at all, and our two main ones called Republicans and Democrats. The Democrats, which used to believe in things like anti-war and freedom, are now openly satanic in many ways and their followers are just so unconscious, they don't even notice it. They just go along with it. And the Republicans play the game of exposing things and doing nothing about it to give the illusion that they actually are different. And the people are there just enduring the results of it, starting to talk about it. And there's, you know, freelance reporters and individual reporters that are not owned by corporations and government. And they're talking about it. This is going on. This is going on. And we see headlines in good places like InfoWars that so-and-so was exposed, so-and-so was caught, all these trafficked children were exposed. But the little detail that's missing is it keeps happening. And I'm just curious about whether you've gone through this thought process of noticing, wow, look what's happening. What do we do? And where that's taken you?
I go through this thought process every night. You know, I lie in bed and I review the events of the day, and some of them I feel good about because, you know, I was able to do this or that. And then there's things I just did. There's the things I just feel terrible about, like, you know, why are these people doing these things, and why can't we all come together in a way that is effective? Mm-hmm. I personally don't know what to do besides what I've been doing. I feel like the old horse with the blinders on, that's just knows the way to the barn, right?
Yes,
knows the way to the barn and to the corral. So I go to the barn and I go to the corral, right? And I just keep writing these articles and I keep appearing on these shows and you know, trying to impress upon people that we're in extreme danger now. And there are certain you know, watch out, look out for that, look out for that. These things can kill you.
And that exposes a pattern. Be aware that the authorities are not necessarily working for your ultimate benefit.
Exactly.
Right.
And somehow I have to believe that these efforts will at some point come to a fruition. What do you think, Richard?
I think they will. I'd like it to be as direct as possible. You know, what bothers me is the global magnitude of human suffering. And it's really, to me, it's really simple. I think, you know, people are all members of one family of life looking through the lenses of these different mental programs and beliefs. But if you take those away, the essence of the people is the same, and they've been taught to fight each other and kill each other and hate themselves, not only recently, but for all of known history. And we've seen country against country, that the history of humanity that we have, even the sketchy part that goes back tens of thousands of years, is all the worst people rising into positions of power and one tries to kill the other before they get killed. And then they get replaced by somebody else who kills them and tries to steal what the people have as much as possible, while the regular people just try to have a normal life under those conditions. And it's going on now, too. It's just with the addition of technology, more advanced technology. So it's possible to surveil everybody in complete.
Well, that's made things very dangerous, and that's actually exponentially increased the risk.
Exactly.
Because you can't do things privately anymore. I mean, there is no privacy anymore.
No, it saves you some trouble because you don't have to hide, because you realize there's no point.
Yeah,
but
right.
You know, it's another conversation, but I think the answer is in a level that has only been barely touched on in quantum physics, which is consciousness. And that the only way that every single person walking around with that can be kept unable to use it to its full potential is for us to be hypnotized into the belief that we're helpless. And even if we know about these bad things going on, if we believe at a really deep gut emotional level that there's nothing we can do and that the power structure, you know, is not even worth challenging, can't be challenged, can't be changed, then they can finish their agendas, which are becoming quite obvious. And I think that it comes down to waking people up. And one element of that that leads to getting in touch with some of these beyond physical level things are the awareness that you're bringing up in the corruption and the collusion. And, you know, I guess I can't say conspiracy, so I won't call it conspiracy, but it's obviously that on a total level. And I think what your writing has done is make that undeniably obvious. So it's been essential. And I think it's, if you're going to have blinders on for a job to do, that's a really good job to do. And at this point, as that continues and you try to hold your life together at the same time, if there's anybody that wants to be supportive, what would you say they should do to help you? Because I think that's a good thing.
Read my work and spread it around. You know, everyone who becomes aware, of the magnitude of the situation we're in, burns for the light. Everyone.
Right.
They can't keep the light hidden anymore. The light suffuses them. So spread my articles around. I mean, not only mine, I'm not certainly not the only one doing this work, right. But share the truth with each other. Every person you tell, you know, for example, did you know that there's a weapon system under our feet having to do with the water? You know, I mean, I've proved it. I've got the blueprints. I've got more. I've proven it. Everyone who knows this now, you know, has the capacity to tell someone else. And I think that's the best we can do.
Okay. And where's the best place for them to follow your work?
I write for Activist Post. So activistpost.com.
Okay. And what about your books?
I actually have 4 books out. 2 are poetry, which is a sort of an esoteric sort of endeavor, which I know not everybody resonates to. My book Exile was published in 2014. It has to do with my journey of awakening. It goes into depth on what happened with my mother and why, and then how this began to both impact and inform me. And that's available at thebookbatch.com. And my 2021 book on the pandemic was published by Trine Day. And at the Breaking Point of History, it's available on Amazon and all the usual sort of book places.
So Amazon, what was that other site for the first book you mentioned?
The first book is only at thebookpatch.com.
The book patch.
Correct.
Okay. And you had mentioned that, among other things that is being done to make things hard for you, they were intercepting the money that you made from the books. Is that still an issue?
Yes. Yes. My book that I wrote for Trine Day, I got a $500 advance, which is actually rather small in book publishing.
Right.
And since then, I have received no royalty checks. When I began to question this, the publisher at Trine Day announced he was going to break my contract and destroy all remaining copies of my book. And that was shocking to me. I was very polite with him. And so he has revamped that decision. But I have still gotten no royalty checks. So that's life in the big city. I mean,
any idea what happened with that? I mean, did somebody talk to him and say how terrible you were, or what do you think was the reason?
I think his behavior speaks for itself. I politely asked to see an enhanced sales report, and as a result, I was threatened with, you know, him breaking the contract and destroying the books. That's a very unusual response for a publisher. So,
yeah. I mean, I'll be the conspiracy theorist in our discussion. you don't have to, but to me, it sounds like, I mean, it's like members of Congress. I mean, in the U.S., they seem to really be controlled by blackmail and bribes and threats to their family. And it, I know examples of that. And one or two of the representatives have actually come out and said it publicly. So the problem that we've got is this typical mafia mentality. And I don't mean to insult the real mafia, because they at least have some standards of conduct. You know, they try not to kill too many women and children and stuff like that, unless there's special circumstances. But the representatives that we've got in government are apparently told by their real bosses what to vote on, and they don't even read the bills. I mean, they can't, because they're written intentionally in legal terms of art that can't be understood anyway, even if you had time to read them. And nobody has time to read them. So these basic issues, even among the reporting entities that are really well motivated and do a great job, they often leave the basic problem undiscussed. And in this case, it would be, how can you allow anybody in government, any so-called representative in a government that pretends to be representative, how can they be allowed to vote, other than voting no, maybe, on something that they haven't read in its entirety and understood? That should be completely illegal. But it's going on every day.
It's going on every day. And when you have mega bills like the USA Patriot Act, which essentially destroyed our privacy rights, destroyed our ability to protect ourselves from biological weapons. I mean, there's so much stuff in there, you know, and our congressman voted for it. And most people maintain they didn't even read it.
It at least it cleared things up in making it obvious that we're all terrorists if we question authority at all. So you've got, if you want to simplify the situation, you've got members of a mega global mafia in almost all the positions, controlling almost all the power positions in governments and corporations. And you've got most of the people just totally entertained and diverted from what's going on. So as long as they keep eating and being able to function, they don't question anything, and they're told not to. And then the ones that do question, they run into problems. So is there any way that people can be of personal assistance to you and what you're dealing with at this point, and helping you keep your work going? What would they do? Is there anything other than just reading your articles and talking about them?
Well, I would like to suggest that people contact the OPCW and ask them to please respond to my request for an investigation. But I don't know if it'll do any good. I mean, I elucidated the problem very clearly to the OPCW. I elucidated where these weapons seem to have come from and how they seem to have been transferred from a nation that has not destroyed its chemical weapons to a nation that maintains it has destroyed its chemical. I mean, it was laid out very clearly, and they have decided to simply hunker down and not respond. You know, at some point in time, I may be able to launch a legal effort against the OPCW, but I'm not sure that I even have standing to do so, because I'm not a nation, you know? So I guess I can get attacked and killed with these weapons, and there's not much I can do about it except let people know. And thank you, Richard, for giving me the opportunity to discuss this. It's not easy for me to do, and you made it actually very easy. Thank you.
I hope you haven't found it too abrasive the way I'm trying to.
Oh no! You've done a wonderful job.
What about if people want to communicate in a helpful way with you? Is there a way to do that and reach you directly through the articles or any other contact information or anything like that?
My email address, people can contact me directly. It's I have a Proton Mail email address that is janet.phalen@protonmail.com.
Okay.
You can contact me there.
Okay. I want to write that one down too. I mean,
thank
I'm
you.
Sure, yeah. I've got it somewhere, but janet.phelan@protonmail, right?
Correct.
Okay. Any kind of summarizing last words that you want to leave people with out of all that we've talked about that you feel is most important to come away with?
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, with all this horror that we're collectively experiencing, and as some of us are experiencing even personally, you know, that there's a lot to be said for having a clean conscience. And there's a lot to be said for doing what one knows is right. And in order for these agendas to be fulfilled, people have to bend and break their own moral compasses. And I simply want to encourage people not to do that.
Yeah.
And because even with, you know, I have a lot of physical distress with these weapons that are being used against me now, but even with the physical distress, my sense of who I am in the world and my sense of peace with who I am and how I conduct myself has grown exponentially, and nothing can take that away. And I want to encourage people to every day to do the right thing.
That would be enough to revolutionize the world and turn it in the opposite direction from where it is now. So I really support that.
Thank you, Richard. And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to discuss all this. I really appreciate it.
Great that you were willing to come. So stay in touch and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. God bless. Bye.
Okay, you guys, there goes Janet Phelan, and brave lady to come on again. Considering what's being done to her and what she's worried about, I mean, I'm sure that her attackers will hear about her going public with this stuff right away. And I tried not to push her into saying more than she wanted to. And fortunately, she said what she wouldn't talk about, which is great. But you get the picture, you know, of what she's going through. And it doesn't really inspire most people to want to step out of line at all, because she's being... I asked her, you know, in the beginning, if you saw the whole thing, why they didn't just kill her instead of taking all this extra trouble and expense to put her through all this torture. And I think she's right that it sends a message to others of us that might want to say something unacceptable, that it's not worth having your life ruined. And that's a strong argument. I mean, it obviously works on all the members of our almost all the members of our Congress to varying degrees. And I think, you know, the bottom line that we are in a situation where we've got this global mafia structure that, I mean, when I took the decades of time to look into it and investigate where it comes from, I mean, at this point, it's okay to be considered crazy to tell the truth, but, and I'm open to being corrected, but what I could tell from it, from my investigation, was that the levels it comes from are non-human, and that at the top of the human power structure are a very small number of families and individuals that are not associated really with any particular country, that they're global in nature and they're satanic in the sense, not that, oh, I have a membership card to the religion of Satanism or anything. That's at the lower levels. At the higher levels, it's more experientially real, and they're in touch with beings that are not in human form. And I've had conversations with people who have detailed reported exactly what that involved, and they're being told what to do, and they're following through in what to me is, you know, an agenda of extermination of life on Earth, which is not what I would like to see happen. And not just the extermination, because I'm not worried about where we go after, but what experience you have before you, what they call die, that's what can make it hell on Earth, like it is for so many people now. And I take exception with that. So what Janet is trying to do is really heroic in a sense, but just normal in a deeper sense, that anybody who really has a picture of what's been going on for tens of thousands of years with almost no break, you know, with history being a series of murder and deception and lies and stealing and torturing. And I mean, none of it should be necessary, because we're just, you know, we're not physical beings. We're just wearing these costumes for a while. And what we do here matters. And we're using positive or negative energy every day in our lives. And we're broadcasting what we carry around with us in a way that's very powerful. So you've got this global mafia cartel that is actually trying to drag everybody down through the stages, is what looks to me like ceremonial steps in a sacrifice to wipe out life on the planet. And people only go along with it when we stay unconscious. And so even though they have all these programs like what Janet was talking about, the chemical weapons and the biological weapons and the criminal media that we've got almost worldwide now in different forms in different countries, and the criminal corrupt educational system that teaches, you know, kids in some countries that are really far gone, like the U.S., to mutilate their bodies and they can be a different gender, which anybody watching is wondering about that. It doesn't work. It doesn't change your chromosomes. And even if it artificially changed your chromosomes, you really wouldn't want to do it. But the insanity is being institutionalized. And so it comes down to a consciousness question, because when you look at the solutions that are being proposed by really brave people like Chris Guy and David Icke and others that are, and Alex Jones too, to a great degree, is saying this is not to be done by preemptive violence. That would be a real big mistake. It just puts a change in which tyrant is in power. It's not a way to change the whole paradigm, which is what needs to be done. So how do you get mass peaceful non-compliance worldwide? It has to come from consciousness, because if you get a certain level of awareness, which really doesn't have to get too far up, you reach a point where you cannot follow insane suicidal orders. You don't want to lose your job, and you don't want to lose your money, and you don't want to be assassinated or anything. But if you're told to, you know, take part in the torture and killing of other people, or poisoning of the world, or, you know, developing new vaccines to kill people and ruin their immune system, or new GMOs, or you're told to keep your lucrative media job, you have to tell lies and say things that are going to hurt people or make them hurt themselves, which is a typical theme. You can't do it. You don't want to suffer or lose your livelihood or, you know, be ridiculed or anything, but you can't follow these things. So how do you change the consciousness? Not waiting for some time in the future where everything's going to be fine, but, you know, can you make it better now? Or question comes up, or things so solidly and concrete, you know, predicted for the future that we can't make things any better now, you know, just in how we treat each other day to day and moment by moment, and what kind of thoughts you carry around with you, whether you're internally, subconsciously condemning yourself constantly, which always reflects in how you treat other people, or can we really make a change? And saying that it's possible doesn't really do anything. I mean, it's like the show me state slogan, right? You have to do it, or it doesn't mean anything. It's just a slogan, and it's just making yourself feel better by saying everything can be better. But can it? I think that's in all of our hands. It's in your hands if you care about this stuff, and in our whoever we're reaching with this video, and if you care about the work that Janet's doing, and ultimately care about what it means. Like, you know, can you do something to change it on a world scale, or are you just one person out of 8 billion, though they're trying to reduce that number pretty quick now, but are you one person out of billions that can't do anything, and you're just helplessly caught in this hell on earth until God saves us at the last minute? Or can you do something today, now, to make it better? And I don't know in the sense that it hasn't been proven on a big scale, but I have the feeling that because of who you are, you can. And the program of all programs behind these global conspiracy cartel mafia has been mainly keep those humans unconscious. Because if they ever wake up, even a few of them, let alone the big numbers, like in the movie, what was it? Ants or a Bug's Life? I think it was A Bug's Life when they said the grasshoppers were saying if the ants ever wake up, they'll realize that they outnumber us and they can ruin the whole system. In our case, it's not entirely dependent on numbers. It's on quality of consciousness, because it's like Einstein mentioned that in one atom, there's enough potential locked up energy to recreate the whole universe. And from what I've seen, that's nothing compared to what's locked up as you, in you, as one point of consciousness. You're not an inanimate object, and you're not necessarily subject to the hypnosis of the global rulers if you don't want to be. So however you want to work on your own awakening, I support you doing that. What we're doing on Planetary Healing Club is trying to work on that in a supportive environment to change, become aware of and change the emotional world that you walk around in, and come to realize that it's voluntary. You know, we're trained to say if a certain thing happens on the outside and there's all kinds of tragic stuff happening every day now, then you have to feel helpless and terrible. And what it turns out is that that's actually not true. Yeah, the emotional world that you choose to live in is voluntary. And if you learn to make that conscious and focus it, not only do you become incapable of doing really harmful things to other people like we've been hypnotized into doing, but you start to affect other people, even if you don't open your mouth. And that's what I want to see spread. So if you're interested in that at all and you want to explore it, you're invited to be part of it at planetaryhealingclub.com. If you have questions about it, write richard@lostartsradio.com. General questions can go to info@lostartsradio.com. And I want to remind you to support the work that Janet's doing, and she wanted you to read her articles, and she gave you her email address at the end. Remember when I was asking her, you know, if somebody wants to help in what you're doing. And it, I mean, this is taking a risk on her part, but she's obviously seen, like we all are, by the global power structure anyway. So there's really no way to hide from it. And if good people want to help Janet, and she's being really, you know, harassed and harmed financially as well as in all other ways, Janet.Phelan, and it's Janet.Phelan at protonmail.com, protonmail.com. And there's, you know, the idea is that Proton Mail is a little more private than some of the big, not only Gmail, but the other ones too. But they thought that about Signal and some of the other apps for communication, and they've been broken by some of the most criminal elements in the world, which are government agencies and corporations. So might as well save the effort. Don't worry about hiding. Just like Janet said, do good. You know, don't hurt other people. Don't disrespect people. Treat them as yourself in another form, because on a much deeper level they are. And if you want to join us in trying to do something in an organized way by working inside yourself in a focused manner with group support, then you're welcome to join us if you want to at planetaryhealingclub.com. It's been in beta stage since 2018, and I wanted to see whether I was going to disappear physically now or not, and it looks like maybe I'm not going to. So we're going to really expand that invitation to people anywhere in the world. You don't have to be in America or in the Western Hemisphere or anything like that. If you're interested in transforming your own life through consciousness so that these things become natural for you and you start to know the influence in a positive way that you have every day on everybody else around you, then I'd like those rare individuals who are ready to do that work, whether you're in Africa or Asia or Russia or China or Mexico or South America or any Canada, America, wherever you are, check out planetaryhealingclub.com. And it'd be nice to have you there. We'll see what we can do. And instead of claiming things, we'll say, all right, time to show me. And that's what we're doing. Anyway, thank you. I'm sorry I ran over time as usual. Janet.Phelan at protonmail.com. And her books are at Amazon or at, what was the other one? It was in, I don't know if I wrote it down. It was in the talk. But the other one is the one that's blocking your money anyway. Look for her books and listen for the detail of where to get the second book. It was Exile, and the other one is the one I'm not remembering, but they're both in the recording. So thanks for being with us. And I really am not doing this to just give you some low-grade entertainment. It's to try to let you know how important you are, not just as one of billions of people, but as an incredible God-connected person yourself. And all this power from higher levels can flow through you. And you don't have to create that. You just have to get rid of the blocks, ego garbage, mind programs, self-condemnation, division with others, and let what's real flow through. And if you do that, the whole negative torture of humanity is over. And I would suggest we do it as soon as possible. So thanks for your contribution of energy to the world. I really appreciate it. Honor you, and we'll see you again soon.